Well, you know, the university has been looking at our involvement in community engagement. We've always been engaged, and now we're trying to reach out even more to the community. And the School of Criminal Justice saw an opportunity to apply for a grant that would allow us to do this year-long project and do some things we hadn't had the funding to do before. So it was the availability of the grant, the university's emphasis on community engagement, and we saw a real need to try to bring together people on campus and in the local community to look at how we can work together to look at innovative ways to deal with criminal justice and social justice problems. There's a lot of overlap between criminal justice and social justice. And so we wanted to think about it in innovative new ways, bring together people across the university who are working on various problems. And sometimes we don't know that we're all working on the same issues, and bring those people together with people in the community and just think about, you know, what, how do we go about doing research? What can we do in terms of education? And we wanted to use this as a jumping off year for the institute that we want to establish in the school.
And this was all looking at the local area, the Capital District?
We're starting with the Capital District, but the Capital District in terms of outreach to the local community. But we're, of course, looking at this nationally and internationally, because there's so many problems that are international in scope, but also played out at the local level. Environmental justice, for example, or genocide. Or the death penalty.
Okay. And you were looking at violence in certain...
We're looking at justice issues.
Justice issues, okay.
Which could include violence, would include violence, but could include other things like food justice, for example, or environmental justice, where there may not be obvious violence when you look at it, but that has a real impact on communities in various ways that eventually will lead in some way to intersection with the criminal justice system.
And what have you found? What are some of the conclusions that people have come to?
Well, we're not really doing research at this point. We have researchers presenting their mm-hmm. research. So we've had a lecture series, and we've been bringing in people. For example, we had an anthropologist from Brown University who was talking about environmental justice on Native American reservations. And obviously they're dealing with some issues related to corporate pollution of the river, where the cultures, the Mohawk culture, for example, has emphasized hunting and fishing. And when the river is polluted and you're no longer able to hunt and fish, that has a long-term impact on the culture of that society. And it spirals off in terms of other ways of dealing with that. For example, getting involved in smuggling or other ways of generating income. And not being able, for example, to pass on the knowledge of the elders to young people. And what does that do to a culture? But also for pregnant women, for example, who are eating fish from polluted rivers. What is the impact of that? So there, you know, corporate pollution, environmental pollution, obviously could be criminal in some cases, and then the long-term social justice impact.
And what types of people were making their presentations on this?
So this was, we brought in individual lecturers to do one keynote lecture. So we also had someone who was talking about the death penalty. We had someone who talked about wrongful convictions and confessions. So we're scheduling films in conjunction with this, with the Writers Institute, with a film series. But we were looking at, within those film series, we started out with Kenyawanda, which was about genocide in Rwanda. We went from there to the death penalty with the execution of Wanda Jean. Then we looked at a film about terrorism. We had a documentary about Native American activists looking at environmental pollution.
And are these people in the academic community, or are they from all parts of the community?
The speakers were academics. Mm-hmm. The people we're bringing in, we did a book discussion, for example, on mass incarceration. Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow. We invited people from the community to come in and sit and talk with our doctoral students, our graduate students, about the issues raised in that book. We've been reaching out to the community about, we did, for example, a town hall meeting when we launched this to tell people in the community what we were going to be doing and invite them to invite us to come to their meetings and talk about what they're interested in. So, for example, we've been talking to a group about incarceration in the community, about their concerns about race and how that plays out. We've been talking to another group about how we work with students, high school students and others around this project that the group has going on. So, you know, we're just beginning, but it's an outreach thing where we're trying to bring together our school, people in, you know, other academic units, together with people in the community, and look at what the issues are people are concerned about and how we work around this. And I want to make a pitch right now for anyone in the community who happens to be listening and who would like to contact us to talk about your interests and how we can work together.
How much involvement have you had from the students?
We've had a lot of involvement from our doctoral students, who are incredible. We asked them to go out and begin to see how we can work with Albany High. So we got into the school late, but we were able to get in and at least begin to talk to some of the students in one of the programs there about justice issues. And they, in fact, had a poster session at our symposium where they, you know, set up and displayed posters they had done about several issues.
When did the involvement with the high school start?
Well, yeah, it started this semester, and we hope it's going to continue in various ways. But you know, we have to figure out the best way to do that. How do we come in so we're getting the students involved and they have a vested interest and they're helping to shape what we're doing? So this, you know, it was, this year was just a startup just to see, you know, what are the issues, how do we get in, how do we do this? So it was, again, a pilot program that we hope is going to continue. But you know, we want to work with high school students, with people in the community, with, you know, whoever's interested in coming together with us to talk about and discuss issues. So as we go forward next year, one of the things we want to look at is food and justice. Because food is something that concerns everyone. And it's one of those issues where it intersects with social justice and criminal justice in really interesting ways. For example, the placement of supermarkets, the lack of supermarkets in poor communities, are the issue, for example, related to that. When you don't have supermarkets, how do you get fresh produce, fresh fruits and vegetables? The need to go to supermarkets by taking a bus or a taxi home from the supermarket. But also, you know, what are kids when they're after school? What are they eating? You know, are they eating fast food? Are they eating? So what is sometimes called food desert, some people don't like that word, but how do you create a sustainable community where everyone has access to food, healthy food? And how does that relate to issues like not only social justice, but criminal justice and things of diet and nutrition and, you know, pregnant mothers and their children and the long-term impact of that when we're looking at what happens to a child at birth and how that relates to, you know, how that child's going to perform later on in school and whether or not he's an A student or, you know, dropping out. But, you know, there are other things involved. There are all kinds of other factors. But nutrition is one of those things we might be thinking about. Or obesity and bullying, for example. So this is one of those issues where we're hoping we're going to bring all kinds of folks together and have a conference around this. We're bringing people from the community, scholars and others, to talk about this issue.
One subject that was broached, I see, in the that I found interesting was the underreporting of crime against sexual minorities.
Well, there are two issues. There is sometimes simply that, and this is true of, you know, sexual assault, whether it's, you know, for sexual minorities or for, you know, for that's gay, lesbian, transgender, or heterosexuals, whoever. But the sex crimes tend to be underreported in general because sometimes people don't define what has happened to them as a crime that they should report, or they think if they report it, nothing's going to happen, particularly if they're poor or racial ethnic minority or a member of a sexual minority group, transgender, for example. And then once it's reported, what happens? Often with this type of crime, unless it's clear, you know, stranger rape, you know, someone attacked, caught on video camera, you know, often it's someone that this person knows or at least has encountered. And so it become a can become a kind of he said, she said kind of thing. And so whether or not once it's reported, the police, you know, do they confirm that this crime probably happened? And if it did happen, you know, what happens after that in terms of what the prosecutor does? So there are all kinds of issues there. So, yeah, this is one of the things we wanted to talk about in thinking about gender, sexuality, and violence, how those things intersect with race and class and, you know, how it plays out in terms of the criminal justice system. And we have some great papers around that. A number of those papers were by graduate students, and we had an undergraduate student competition. And actually, three papers were going to be presented. Our third paper winner was stuck in Philadelphia. Her flight was canceled. But the two undergraduates presented really incredibly good papers. And the doctoral students were excellent, and so were our professors who presented.
An interesting presentation, too, was one on the portrayal of women as criminal justice professionals on network television.
That was one of our undergraduate papers.
Oh, okay.
Terrific.
It sounds fast. I mean, I want to read it now. It sounds fascinating.
She did a great job. So that the other person who was presenting on sex workers, that was also an undergraduate paper.
So what next? Where does it go from here?
So we're going to continue. We know the institute is going to go on in a school. We're going to continue to look for funding because, as with all, you know, nonprofits, there is always that issue around funding. But we think, you know, something like food and justice is one of those things where we can get various groups coming together around that. But we want to continue with the film series. I want to give a shout out here to the New York State Writers Institute. They've been great partners for this film series. We did a series within a series. So with the justice films within their Friday evening series. And WMHT also allowed us to have the first regional showing of the Central Park Five, the documentary. And we were able to bring in the producers, Kim Burns' daughter, Sarah Burns, and her husband were here for that. So we've been really gotten a lot of support from, you know, our partners, including SUNY Central, who gave us the grant in the beginning. So we're hoping we are going to continue to find those partners.